This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Look around. Have we all gone mad? Or is it just those other people suffering from mass psychosis? Anti-vaxxers, mask protests, conspiracy theories, our guest says we have seen it all before. But now they may be on steroids due to social media, mass media, and strange politics. As a clinical psychologist, Australian Stephen Taylor specializes in anxiety, OCD, PTSD, and related mental health problems. Stephen is currently working at Canada's University of British Columbia. While publishing books and papers, he took an interest in pandemics. When Taylor drew that together for a new book, his publisher rejected it. But the book, The Psychology of Pandemics, Preparing for the Next Global Outbreak of Infectious Disease, was released in October 2019, 1 month before COVID-19 was found in Wuhan, China. After his timely book, Taylor is riding a crest of demand for new understanding. How do we all react in a pandemic? And how can we heal? From Vancouver, Canada, Stephen Taylor, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks very much, Alex.
Let's dive right in. Loud resistance movements against public health measures bubbled out of America. They happen in Canada, Australia, France, and more. Is there a kernel of rationality behind these protests?
Well, there's a way of understanding them, and people being social creatures, lockdown requires that people inhibit that natural tendency to socialize. So, yes, there is a kernel of truth in this. Lockdown is bad for people's mental health, so I can understand why people are resistant to it. Lockdown is an unfortunate, necessary evil for mitigating pandemics.
One YouTube video claims society is experiencing a mass psychosis. Does the term mass psychosis have meaning for you in psychology?
Not really, no. That's an exaggeration. Sure, a lot of things are happening and many people are very frightened, and of course there are conspiracy theories floating around, but yeah, this is not psychotic phenomena. You can't explain things like panic buying by referring to madness or psychopathology. There is a certain logic to all of these things that we're seeing.
Okay, let's talk about your research into historic pandemics like the Russian flu of 1889 or the 1918-19 Spanish flu. What social expressions from previous pandemics rose again this time around, Stephen?
Of course, if you compare COVID-19 to the so-called Spanish flu, the parallels are striking. There was the anti-mask movement in 1919, expressed for the very same reasons that we're seeing today. So people doubting the efficacy of masks or people not wanting to be told what to do, so was that. There was the growing pandemic fatigue in 1919. People were sick of lockdowns. They were sick of restrictions. They were tired of not being able to open their businesses. And so you had that growing protest in which communities responded, as they're doing today, by becoming increasingly heavy-handed. Police were threatening to arrest people who were violating social distancing back in 1919, and we're seeing the same today, where people are getting ticketed and fined for having parties or getting on buses without masks. So the parallels are striking.
Have you found any syndromes or conditions that are unique to the COVID-19 pandemic?
So far, no. There's nothing unique to COVID per se, but we are seeing a rise in clinical conditions you would not see in non-pandemic times. So, for example, we're seeing an increase in bereavement with people with chronic grief disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder associated with getting infected, long COVID, you know, that persistent symptoms. So these are things that seem to be relatively specific to a pandemic, but they're not specific to COVID. During the Spanish flu and during the Russian flu, there were long forms of the disorder. People had recovered from the acute phases of influenza, but then gone and developed things like chronic fatigue or persistent headaches or things like that. So the phenomena we're seeing today have been seen before.
Yes, there are reports of lower IQ, PTSD, and even early onset dementia, especially in people coming off ventilators. Have you encountered people with post-COVID problems already, and what have you heard?
I haven't encountered people specifically in my clinical practice, but there's been a huge variety, a huge range of responding. Some people do develop symptoms that resolve naturally over time, and I think that's based on the evidence so far, it looks like with most cases of long COVID, the symptoms do resolve in the weeks or months afterwards. So that's good news that the symptoms will resolve, at least for some people. But it's really not known at this point how persistent the symptoms could become in some people.
Well, I know old people remember a generation with many people crippled by polio, including President Franklin Roosevelt. He was wheelchair-bound by it. Now we have long COVID. Stephen, have you heard of plans to cope with long COVID mental health needs?
Well, this is part of the problem. All of our plans, mental health around COVID, have been reactive rather than proactive. That is, waiting for problems to arise rather than anticipating them. And I think we could have done a way better job of dealing with the mental health aspect of COVID in preparing for things like long COVID. So, no, I'm not aware of any big plans underway at this point. It is going to be a huge problem in the post-pandemic world. Long COVID, prolonged grief, post-traumatic stress disorder, the rise of germophobia. Yeah, so a substantial minority of people will have clinical problems that will merit treatment.
Well, if you have problems, you might go to your family doctor, but the best they can do in the 8 minutes they have to see you is to prescribe pills or to send you for talk therapy. And there just aren't enough mental health professionals to cope with what we're seeing now. Are mental health professionals coming under the kinds of stresses that we see in other parts of the medical profession?
Very much so. Mental health professionals were stretched thin. Our mental health system was broken before COVID. There weren't enough resources to deal with the mental health problems. And the situation has got even worse. So, yes, it has been a very difficult time, not only for frontline healthcare workers, but also for mental health professionals.
Yes, polls and studies show mental stress has risen significantly during the pandemic in all countries who measure it. According to a poll done by the American Psychiatric Association, more than 4 in 10 Americans say they are more anxious than last year, and it gets more serious than that. But like the virus, that anxiety tends to come in waves. It goes up and down, doesn't it?
Exactly, yes. So I would be skeptical about reading sensational news reports about the prevalence of mental illness in communities. A lot of those reports are just based on cross-sectional studies. What is more telling are the longitudinal studies, and as you alluded to, Alex, the rise and fall of anxiety, and that is what's happened during COVID. For example, as infections increase, people become more anxious. As infection rates in your community decrease and lockdown restrictions are eased, people's mental health improves. So I guess the good news is that people do bounce back. You might be feeling anxious or irritable or mildly depressed now, but when things are eased up, for most people, their mental health rebounds.
Of course, that presumes that COVID-19 is going to go away, that we're eventually going to conquer it, but some dark voices have suggested that it will become endemic, that we'll have to have shots regularly, and it will always be with us. In that case, that makes it more difficult.
It does. It does. It makes it more challenging, particularly when you add in the stresses of climate change and things like that. But human beings are adaptive. And, you know, our problem as a species is we're just too adaptive. We've overrun the planet. If you look back, we coped with 3 centuries of recurrent plague, wave upon wave of bubonic plague. Human beings coped with that and bounced back, and here we are. We've endured countless pandemics and other outbreaks over the millennia and survived. So I'm confident that even if COVID becomes endemic and we have to deal with it on a seasonal basis, that human beings will survive and flourish, because that's what we've done in the past with way worse diseases.
And the mental health stress from the pandemic is not evenly distributed. Could you talk to us about who suffers more mentally?
It's the same old story. The people who are poor, indigent, who have trouble making payments on rent, who have food insecurity, they're always the most vulnerable group during pandemics. And just to give you an example of that, in India, there are millions upon millions of internal migrant workers. And these are workers from the villages who travel hundreds of miles to the big cities to work at menial laboring jobs. And during lockdown in 2020, these people were out of work. When everything closed down, they were told to shelter in place. They said to themselves, we have no food, we have no income, we can't pay the rent. They all fled in a mass exodus back to their villages. Tens of thousands crowding the bus depots. These are the people who needed help the most, because not only for their own economic plight, but the fact that they are spreading infection by fleeing. So, yes, the plague, although pandemics can infect everyone equally, not everyone is equally touched by them. The rich have a way easier time of it than the poor.
But apparently there are a few people who enjoy causing suffering in others instead. Talk to us about the role of the internet trolls creating new phobias.
Well, these have always been around. The WHO, interestingly, in early 2020, they warned about trolls and misinformation and about the havoc that that could cause. Trolls are people who get their kicks out of creating mischief and mayhem. They're almost like a Joker-style Batman supervillain, that they get a thrill out of causing mischief on a widespread basis. They tend to be lacking in empathy and psychopathic in nature, and they have this trait called negative social potency. And what that means is they get a real kick out of creating chaos and mayhem and distress for other people. Those people have always been around. They're very difficult to deal with. I guess the best advice for them is the old advice, do not feed the trolls. And that means don't respond to them. If you see some kind of malicious or sensational news story, be careful about forwarding it. Let me just give you an example about this. It's not a COVID example, just to illustrate. Trollery has been around forever when pandemics are concerned. If you go back to 2003, the SARS outbreak, a troll set up a fake website in Hong Kong, a news website, a spoof news website, and claimed that Hong Kong was going to be going into cordon sanitaire, that is, going into lockdown. And it was fake. But what that did is it caused widespread panic, panic buying, and people fleeing the city. So that's an example of trollery. So the way in which they're dealt with is either shutting down the fake websites and trying not to respond. Don't forward those sorts of messages if they seem sensational.
Even blaming some enemy for releasing bioweapons is not new. You talk about people believing that the Germans had released the Spanish flu on America through U-boats or something.
Yeah. And if you doubt it, you can go into the New York Times archives and find the New York Times article on that. I've got it. It was a health authority there in New York City who was interviewed and said that he believed the rumor that Germans were arriving in U-boats in the dark of night and German agents were coming ashore with containers with the virus and spreading it through saloons and cinemas and stuff like that. Of course, there was no basis to it. But yes, there have always been conspiracy theories and there have always been rumors in which some outsider has brought in the infection. That's been a common narrative in previous outbreaks, that the infection is somehow brought by a foreigner or brought into the community that way.
Some psychologists see a pattern in people who refuse to believe COVID-19 is real or think the pandemic is just a control mechanism for Bill Gates and George Soros. Is there anything we can do to soften public anger when the next pandemic or big flu season hits?
My concern is we're not very good at learning the lessons of the past. We should have anticipated all of this back in early 2020. In fact, in early 2020, I was talking about the problem of vaccination hesitancy and conspiracy theories. These things will happen in the next pandemic. Conspiratorial thinking has always been around. So I guess the best we can do is try and learn the lessons. And one lesson we can learn from COVID-19 is conspiracy theorists are a minority. Sure, they're entitled to their views, but we don't have to give them the airplay that would broaden their audience. So there is something to be said for just leaving these people be, not stirring up the hornet's nest. If you're not going to be able to persuade someone to get vaccinated, sure, you can set up vaccine incentive programs like vaccine passports, but engaging in dialogue with hardcore anti-vaxxers can make the problem worse. It can cause them to dig in their heels to justify their position. So we need to be very careful about how we engage in those sorts of individuals. So that isn't quite a fully formed lesson for the future, but it's the basis of one. We need to start thinking about the next pandemic and how are we going to anticipate and deal with these sorts of problems. Similarly, it's not just pandemics. We need to think about what are we going to do about climate-related disasters, because you're going to see similar phenomena. For example, forced migration due to rising sea levels or desertification. that is where you've got masses of people migrating to other places. We're going to see similar sorts of phenomena, xenophobia, conspiracy theories, racism, conflicts. We need to start working on addressing those sorts of social problems and not just for pandemics.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is clinical psychologist Dr. Stephen Taylor. He's the author of the book, The Psychology of Pandemics. Stephen Taylor, how many papers have you published about the pandemic psychology since your book came out in 2019? Can you talk to us about a couple of things that you looked into?
Yeah, we've been doing research since the very beginning of COVID-19, my colleagues and I. It's internet-based research, obviously, because everyone was in lockdown. But we were able to sample thousands and thousands of adults from Canada and the United States, and we assessed them in multiple ways. So I guess we've published about 20 papers, research papers, on various aspects of the psychology of COVID-19. I guess one of the interesting things, at least for me, that's come out of this is pandemics evoke extreme reactions. You get extremes of people becoming highly, highly anxious at one end of the spectrum, and at the other end of the spectrum are the people who think the whole thing is a hoax or a joke. So pandemics tend to evoke those sorts of things, and we have found evidence of what we're calling a COVID stress syndrome, and that's an adjustment disorder. That is a form of high anxiety or excessive anxiety in response to a stressor. So people who have this COVID stress syndrome, they're anxious about the finances, the infection, they're xenophobic, they're having nightmares, they're compulsively checking the internet. But for many of those people, I expect that level of distress should abate once the pandemic is over, for most but not all people. So we've been looking at that. We've also been looking at anti-vax and anti-mask attitudes and finding evidence of the role of psychological reactants in those phenomena. And psychological reactants is a personality trait where people who are raised in societies that teach them to value individuality tend to bristle and protest if they're being told what to do. It's almost an allergic reaction to being told what to do. So if you have a high level of psychological reactants and I tell you you should wear a mask, you're going to bristle at that, you're going to think of counter-arguments, and you're going to object. So we're finding that's playing a role in just about all the anti-sorts of behaviors during COVID, anti-mask, anti-lockdown, anti-vax, and so forth.
As you told the Canadian Psychological Association, there is more research on pandemic psychology now than ever before. Is a new book or even a new field of study emerging?
Yeah, yes. I'm working on it right now, a new book. There's so much information out there, so much new and useful information. And, of course, the historical record hasn't been fully mined either. There are a lot of important sources of information there to help us understanding the pandemic. So, yeah, I am working on a new book on the psychology of pandemics. Maybe be done in a year or so.
Some experts say we need to manage stress levels in the population during all this, but lying or sugarcoating an ugly truth can lead to mass deaths. It's pretty serious. Can we reduce pandemic stress and still keep our eyes open?
That's the balancing act, isn't it? It's a challenge that health authorities have grappled with, that we're all grappling. You're trying to get people to take the pandemic seriously, to shelter in place and do all those things without making them overly anxious. That's a real challenge. For some people, just that message will make them highly anxious. Other people will dismiss it. It's a balancing act. I guess what can be done is targeted messaging. So you target particular individuals, say a demographic group that might not be taking the pandemic seriously. You might be targeting them with a more serious fear-evoking message than you might target, say, people who are elderly and medically compromised and already worried about their health. You would not want to terrify them even further. So a message for them would be more calm, matter of fact, this is what you do to deal with COVID. So it's a challenging situation where there's no single message that reaches every group in society. You need to target things.
Well, here's another tough challenge for many of my listeners. There is a fear that more psychological knowledge will be used by the few to control the many. In fact, some psychology has been used against us by advertisers and even politicians. Stephen Taylor, do you see ways to kind of popularize mental health techniques so they belong to everyone?
I think that's a really good point. We need to start talking more about nudges. Nudges have been all over the media, and nudges have been around for a long time, and they are subtle ways of pushing people in the right direction, or not. So, for example, the candies you see in the checkout lineup, that is a nudge. That is making it more convenient for you to buy candy. So advertisers have used this forever. During COVID, there's been all kinds of nudges to persuade people to do things like get vaccinated or wear masks. There is an ethical side to that, that you are manipulating people. So whatever nudges you're doing, you need to ask yourself, is this ethically responsible? Because oftentimes you're implementing nudges without a person's knowledge or consent. You know, if I set the candy bars up near the cash register and suddenly this increases the sale of those candy bars, I'm manipulating people to buy those candy bars without them knowing what is happening to them. So I think some knowledge about how we influence one another in the world, and we've been doing this for millennia, influencing one another, but some more knowledge about that and how that can be used for ethically sound and useful purposes needs to be done. But I agree with you, Alex. More generally, people need to know about psychological tools for managing stress levels. Now, these aren't some dark arts. These are often practical strategies that people can learn to help. And fortunately, during COVID, there have been a rise of online mental health resources that people can consult with to provide them with the tools for managing stress in their daily lives.
Do you have an online website or a Twitter handle or anything like that?
I have a website. It's drstephentaylor.com, but that does not have a lot of treatment-related resources on it. We are working on a treatment platform right now, but it's going to be some time in the making, but that's in the works.
Can we do better to build pandemic resilience into our culture?
We can do a whole lot better. You know, one of the things that struck me as a real gem during COVID was the way in which COVID-19 dealt with in Chengdu in China, the capital of Sichuan province, which is actually relatively close to Wuhan. During lockdown, they set up this magnificent mental health program on a shoestring budget. It was two dozen mental health practitioners, nurses, physicians, psychologists, and they set up TV programs, social media, informing people with tips about managing their mental health. They had a referral service, so you could call in the phone lines where you got advice, and if that advice wasn't sufficient, then you were triaged to Zoom calls with a mental health practitioner. So that was set up. It raised the consciousness in society that these problems are around, and here's what you do, and here's some help. I think it was a wonderful, it was up and running in March of 2020. We should have been doing something like that here because we need to. A magnificent program.
Stephen, I know you're super busy. Is there anything else you would like to say as we wrap this up?
Yeah, I want to touch on one thing before we wrap up. We've been doing research on a phenomenon called post-traumatic growth, and it's a concept that's been around for a long time, and research from previous disasters has shown that for many people, they go through a disaster like a flood or earthquake or hurricane, and they grow as human beings. They become stronger in some fashion. And we were looking at that in COVID, and so we published one study recently based on a couple of thousand Canadians and adults, and we asked them, we said, well, COVID has been bad. Many people have become very sick and died, but have there been any silver linings for you? And these are all people who are not infected with the coronavirus. And we found that three-quarters of them said, yeah, that they've become more resilient, they have a greater appreciation for friends and family, a greater appreciation of trust in their communities, deepening spirituality, and so forth. So it isn't all bad news. Some people are coming out of this as stronger individuals.
From Vancouver, Canada, we've been speaking with UBC professor and clinical psychologist Stephen Taylor. His book, The Psychology of Pandemics, is still a standard for understanding the psychology of this crisis. You can find links to Stephen and his work in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.